Right now, fuel is top of mind for most Australians. From your car to your travel, I think it's fair to say a lot of us are reconsidering how we get around and the energy we rely on. Chris Bowen, your energy minister, has seized on this, saying the current struggle underlines the need for electrification and renewable energy.
There isn't one country in the world that said, you know what this fuel crisis reminds us is we need more fossil fuels. That conversation is not being had anywhere around the world. In fact, countries around the world are saying this underpins and underlines the need to keep going with things like electrification and ensuring renewable energy is an important part of the mix going forward. No war can impede the flow of sun to Australia. No sanctions can be applied to wind. And the sun has to travel 150 million kilometres to Earth. It doesn't have to travel the 150 kilometres of the Straits of Hormuz. So what we can do is work to build resilience and sovereignty at the same time as reducing emissions.
But honestly, a lot of you have already done it. You've put solar on your roof. Your new car is an EV or a hybrid. You're building more efficient homes or installing batteries. It's not some top-down transition. It's DIY. It's happening street by street. Households are spending their own money, taking a risk and figuring out how to cut fossil fuels out of their lives. Some people even getting close to off-grid in the middle of cities. If you've made some of these changes, I would love to hear about it. What sort of things have you done to your house or your life as a move towards green energy? Because the real question is, if people are doing the heavy lifting, is the system keeping up? You're about to hear from someone from a local-led electrification project, but first, Peter Newman is a Professor of Sustainability at Curtin University. Peter, am I overstating this? How much are individuals leading the renewable charge?
Oh, they're very much leading the charge, and we're now up to somewhere between 40 and 50% of households with rooftop solar. The 50% certainly has been reached in Perth. And that saves a third of a power bill. And the batteries are coming now, only about 5% of households now, but just in this recent time, it went up to 15% of in sales increased. And that saves, that then together saves two thirds of a power bill. So if you put that together with an EV, you can save a lot of money because you can drive 40 kilometres on a dollar of power from the sun and 5 kilometres only on a dollar's worth of petrol. So it's significantly better and you will save a lot of money.
And is the government kind of relying on this consumer-led factor?
Well, I think they were very happy to see it, and many of the utilities certainly were happy to see it because they were very stuck in their ways. It's a it's quite a profession to produce electricity and keep it coming, so that whole system had to change quite rapidly, and it's now doing it and finding that it works. So governments can intervene to a certain degree to help kick it along, and there's now an overarching program to get rid of fossil fuels from our economy, which comes from the Paris Agreement, which is the international agreement from 2016. So we are within that context, but I think that the whole thing is being driven by us because we chose to take on these new technologies and they work. So let's go with it.
I do want to talk more about the structural side of things in a minute, but also here with us is Krista McDonald, who's the Director of Strategic Programs at Rewiring Australia. She's a founding member of Electrify 2515, which is a locally led project aimed at turning the Illawarra region into an electric community. Kristen, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having me.
What are you trying to do with Electrify 2515?
Well, this was a concept brought about basically a ragtag group of volunteers in our local area. We listened to one of our local neighbours, Dr. Saul Griffith, talk about the benefits that electrification could bring. This is about 3 years ago. And he said, we really need to sort of demonstrate that it actually works. And so some friends and I decided that, well, why don't we see if our community would be up for trying to create this demonstration project in our community. And we were really pleased to see that people were right behind us. We sent out a survey to see where people were at. And after just a few days, we got 500 people tell us that they want to take part in some sort of project that would help electrify their homes and cars, and that number just really grew. So we spent the next couple of years putting together a really comprehensive application to get a funded project up, which ended up being successful by ARENA, the Renewable Energy Agency, to fund what now is Australia's first community-led electrification project, where we're intending to work with up to 500 households in our local grid to upgrade their homes and get them off gas faster than they usually would, and then to research the impact on those households but also the impact on our local grid. And the benefit of that research would be to accelerate the process at scale nationally.
So when you started going around and talking to people in the community, what sort of attitudes were you encountering? Were people excited about it, or were they pushing back?
I wouldn't say that people were pushing back, but choosing to change the way someone goes about their life, it really is a process that they have to go through. So we did really need to start with education to demonstrate why replacing our trusty old gas appliances and petrol cars that we've been driving for decades is actually a really good idea for households. And furthermore, we needed to convince them about why they should be doing this naturally ahead of when they might be replacing those objects, because it's beneficial for our whole community. So, for instance, we worked out that the 4,500 households in our 2515 postcode were spending $15 million collectively each year filling up their cars, which go basically on a one-way ticket overseas to foreign oil companies. That would be even more in this current awful crisis today. But if those cars were all electric, not only would that a good portion of that $15 million be reinvested back into our local economy, we'd be creating lots and lots of local jobs installing electric chargers and all those home upgrades. We'd be creating healthier homes, quieter streets, creating more resilience in our local grid. So there was a lot of kind of arguments, or I guess convincing to be had, in the sense that this is a really good idea for individuals, it's a really good idea for our collective community, and it's something that we really need to chart Australia on the same path.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, talking to Kristen McDonald, the Director of Strategic Programs at Rewiring Australia, talking to her about a specific project, Electrify 2515, as in the postcode 2515 in the Illawarra. And I'm also with Peter Newman, Professor of Sustainability at Curtin University. We're talking about taking the energy transition into your own hands, and a lot of you have things to say about it. A lot of texts about the things that you've done at home. Mukul says, I have solar panels and a battery and EV and use electric heaters. My electric bill is bugger all. John says, a friend of mine took his electric car back to his hometown in coal country in Queensland to give people a taste of the joys of electric transportation. He's now involved in a project to bring electric semi-trailers to the Melbourne to Sydney corridor. And Simon says, we've gone fully electric at home, both cars, solar, a battery and no gas, and we've seen significant financial benefits from that investment. That said, we were fortunate to have the capital to make the shift in the first place. It really highlights the challenge. Those who can afford to invest reap the rewards, while those who would likely benefit the most often face the biggest barriers to getting started. Peter, talk me through this equity piece here.
Yes, it's very much part of the energy transition to enable it to be done in an equitable way. That's really what the Net Zero Authority has been set up to do, particularly as the transition away from coal occurs in regional cities. But that is underway as well. There are a lot of precincts that are being established where there's a proportion of affordable housing in them and they are net zero, they have the opportunity for people with low incomes to be part of that development. Now, that's the way that a lot of town planning is done to increase equity. It isn't just that you push the poor away. If they are part of it, it's a better overall society, and that can often be part of local government regulations on anything that's happening, as well as state government, as they provide a lot of the infrastructure. So why not enable it to be a community-based thing with all the community involved? So you can do it. It's just like normal town planning. You just need to incorporate these new technologies into any development. So a net zero precinct with affordable housing, there's plenty of them around now. I'm doing one up in Derby that's on the agenda to enable a whole Indigenous community there to have access to this. So you can do it. It's just a matter of turning your mind to it.
Peter, I'm interested to talk about the idea of the grid. Previous to all of this electrification and the move towards solar at this grassroots level, we had a system where we kind of developed our power in a single spot and it got farmed out to everyone, and we have more and more solar coming into that grid. We've got EVs potentially being part of that now. At what stage do we start to maybe destabilize this shared resource of the grid rather than help it?
Yeah, well, that's what the utilities have always been scared of, because they're used to having a thing called baseload, which is now no longer needed. And baseload was pretty silly, because coal-fired power stations would stay on for 24 hours even when they're not being needed at night. So all of that's wasted, that energy. So this thing with solar is that it's not there during the night. So in the evenings especially, you do need power, so you need the batteries to back it up. So the whole idea is to try and balance the system to have the solar and wind and batteries all working together, so that you won't need any backup. And the experiments that are being done within all the utilities are showing that you can do it quite easily. It is a matter of having the smart systems that enable it to come on and off very quickly. And that's what batteries are now doing. So we don't actually need coal for baseload or gas for backup. Both of them are being shown to be unnecessary because of these new technologies. And we've got a number of projects, Project Symphony and Project Jupiter in Perth, which were done using community batteries along with the solar on each of the houses that people had. And that worked beautifully to have a shared approach to batteries. So shared batteries are now part of a lot of systems that are going out there. And what they create is what is called a virtual power plant. So that area produces their own power, and it is part of the system and it backs up the system, but mostly it is providing for that local area. And that virtual power plant is proving to be the new direction that most of the utilities are going in, a whole series of virtual power plants all linked together to make the grid.
In addition to people telling me on the text line what they've done in their home, and there's lots of EVs and lots of solar panels in that chat, there's people making some broader comments that I'd like to put to you both. One says, the reality is that consumer solar is excellent for homes, but that network won't supply industry such as smelters, fertilizer plants, or AI data centers. It's large-scale renewable energy that's urgently required and not getting approved at a real-world timescale. Peter, what do we need to do about this?
Yeah, the issue is clearly there that industry needs a much more concentrated power, and they are now beginning to do it. The biggest one over in our part of the world is Twiggy Forest's Fortescue mining development, which they said they would get by 2035 a completely fossil fuel free mining structure, which is, there's a lot of intensive energy used. So they've made their own solar farm and a wind farm, and that's all connected up. And they now are running electric trains, electric trucks, electric machinery. And what they're finding is that they don't have to wait till 2035. They'll have it all by 2030. Mm. So it's actually not a scary thing to do. You can actually get into it and find that it happens a lot quicker than you thought. So those industries that are getting into it will be the ones that benefit, because they'll be able to have a product that they can say is net zero. You can have a premium price on it. That's the kind of world we're entering into. So it isn't a question of constantly finding what are the problems. You just got to get on and do it.
Mm. Kristen, this one for you. There's actually a couple of people with similar points. One text says, I want to point out that I'm 31 and still unable to own my own home. Self-led feels a bit exclusive, and for people who are able to own their own homes, I know for me and all my friends, we can't be self-led. We can't afford a home, let alone an electric vehicle. Would be nice to hear conversations directed at our age bracket who work our butts off and still can't get ahead. The other end of the spectrum, Ron says, I would love to move to rooftop solar, electric car, battery charger, etc. But some of us are living in ordinary old houses in neighbourhoods prime for redevelopment, ageing in our 60s, and prime for old people's homes in, say, 20, 30 years. So the cost benefit to my population segment is not there, or is it? Both ends of the adult age spectrum kind of feeling like maybe this conversation isn't for them. What do you say to that, Kristen?
I hear you, and it's a really valid concern that this isn't necessarily playing out equally across all the demographics. I would say that for those who can make the switch now, it really makes sense. You don't need to do it all at once, but basically every time an appliance or a car needs replacing, we need to make sure people have the knowledge and the confidence that they would replace that with an efficient electric option. Now, of course, that isn't always that easy, and particularly for certain sections of society, and that's when the government really does come in. So we need to be able to, for instance, ensure that the one-third of our homes that are renters have access to electrification benefits as well. And that's only going to be achieved through things like minimum rental standards that can be enforced. Unfortunately, we've seen in our own pilot that out of the 750 applications to the pilot, only 12 have been for rental properties, and they're voluntary landlords wanting to make that change, but we can't necessarily rely on that. So we do need those strong protocols in place that get set at that government level. Similarly, for homes that are low-income homes, they can be really important programs in place, such as access to no interest loans backed by government that would actually ensure low-income homes can have those upgrades into their homes as well. I would also say for those who aren't directly benefiting from, say, putting solar on their home, there are other ways that they are receiving benefits, although they might not realise it directly. So the more solar and renewable energy that's in our electricity and energy system, the cheaper that cost is getting overall. And so even if you don't have solar on your roof, you can use things like retail plans that have things like the free 3 hours of solar power offered during the day. And that's actually coming into force that every retailer in certain states like New South Wales have to actually, every retailer has to offer those three free hours of solar for free to all homes. So there are other ways that we can benefit. Of course, you know, it doesn't seem as attractive, but there is confidence to know that the more homes that are getting off gas and getting off, and the more cars that are getting off petrol and diesel, it actually is benefiting all Australians at large. So we do need a combination of individuals making choices when they can, and governments supporting the rest of the rest of households to do so.
It's Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor with Kristen McDonald from Rewiring Australia and Peter Newman, Professor of Sustainability at Curtin Uni, talking about grassroots attempts to transition to green energy. Of course, Kristen, who I'm speaking to, is part of Electrify 2515, the postcode. And Denise from Coaldale in that postcode has texted saying, we're retired and on the age pension. Over the last 5 years, we took advantage of state and federal government incentives to invest in solar, EV and house battery. Total energy bill, including car, now less than $100 a quarter. my goodness. Even though we dipped into our super to pay for the battery, we're much better off. Another person says, I've just added batteries to my solar array and a major element was the $1,000 rebate offered by my power provider. However, this was not a seamless process. In fact, it was opaque and complicated and I almost gave up. It would have been impossible without the Gen Zs in my life. Buyers beware and solar providers, up your game. Kristen, is education and confusion still a big barrier for people?
Absolutely. When we first surveyed our community about what's kind of stopping people from doing more, you know, upgrading their homes and cars, the top two responses were the upfront cost and also a lack of certainty or trust or a bit confusion of how to get about this. And so our pilot program has really tried to address both of those factors by trying to slightly reduce those upfront costs, but also by providing trusted local sources of information to support homes, because it is really confusing. It's, you know, you need to get lots of different quotes from installers and they might all be telling you different things. There's a lot of rebates to be navigating online and it's a confusing process. And I think that there really does need to be investment at also the education element of this transition and the support systems that can be played. And we're seeing this actually being fueled by informally a lot of local volunteers and a lot of local community networks. When we started Electrify 2515, we got lots of individuals or community groups across Australia saying, oh, we would like to try and do something similar in our neighbourhoods. And we've actually managed to convene an informal network of community groups that are providing these independent support structures for their communities by helping run educational workshops or helping to show test drives of local electric vehicles so people get a sense of what they look and feel like, because we're finding that information is really important in this transition. Rebates alone aren't going to solve it. We need to have support systems in place at that local level.
Peter, briefly, there's so clearly an appetite for this from consumers. Does the government have the vision and commitment to see it through?
Well, it's a lot more vision than Scott Morrison gave us when he said that the EVs would be the end of the weekend. And at that stage, there was a commitment to producing 50% of EVs in Australia by 2020. Just imagine if we'd had that in place. Instead, all of them were scarred by the fact that they seem to be winning over the Australian population at that stage. But clearly, they now can see that this transition to solar batteries, electric vehicles is better, and Gen Z is helping as much in that transition. So I think that the public are now communicating that. I don't think anyone is going to get elected on saying we don't need net zero. It's going to be a nonsense idea because this is so obviously working. Mm.
Peter, Kristen, thank you again so much for joining me this morning. Peter Newman, Professor of Sustainability at Curtin University. Kristen McDonald, Director of Strategic Programs at Rewiring Australia. And thank you so much for sharing your thoughts as well. One text says, we've recently changed our power to a community battery. We have solar panels, but send our excess power to a community battery to share with others. Another says we need to accelerate the electrification of all our transportation. Doing so will make Australia energy independent.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.